It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum Number 3, the Weefly podcast. Well, this week we have so much to look at, so we're just going to take six subjects, and I want to begin with the politics of fear.
The political class, it doesn't like Brexit. The vast majority of the political class, the vast majority of the capitalist class, the bosses, all elements of the establishment, in essence, don't like Brexit.
Now, this kind of madness that's going on with Brexit, the hysteria and so on, what we call Project Fear. On average, every 8 to 12 hours over the past week, there's been a scare story that's come up about Brexit. Some people think it's being released by the government in order to get their MPs to come into line with their compromised Chequers project. But some of it is ridiculous. Some concerns are genuine.
Many people in the EU are thinking that they just have to wait long enough and Britain will blink. And that's not going to happen.
But the notion that we're going to end up with a Britain with no medicine, no food, sexual diseases increasing, the plague, yes, we're going to have all kinds of diseases, and famine. It's, as people have noted, is like the 10 plagues of Egypt, the 10 plagues of Brexit. When we had the Scottish referendum in 2014, Project Fear was also in full flight. We were told that Scotland could not be independent, that it depended so much on England. And of course, like all fear projects, there's an element of truth in that. And I suspect that in the end, Project Fear actually won. And who knows, it may well do here as well. Why are people doing this? I think that there are people who are doing it because they are very concerned about what's happening in the culture and society, but I think they're also concerned about their own position, their own finances, and so on. I do like a lot, and we put a link to this on the blog, Brendan O'Neill's article in Spiked on the Remain of Politics of Fear. Let me just read this bit. He calls it Brexit derangement syndrome. This attempt to beat the populace into EU accepting submission by warning us that our children might starve and our loved ones with diabetes might die if we crash out of the EU confirms the contempt in which the political class holds the public. It confirms that they see us not as citizens to be engaged with, but as overgrown children to be panicked and cajoled into accepting that the adults, them, know what's best for society. This Project Fear could backfire badly by showing Brexit voters that they were dead right to view the technocratic elite as a contemptuous class and dead right to vote against it in the referendum.
So we are heading for something far worse than annoying Brussels or Theresa May having trouble with her cabinet. We're heading for a serious historic crisis of democracy, because if you outsource a decision like this to ordinary people and they make their choice clear and it's not followed through, people are going to lose faith in politics, they're going to lose faith in politicians, and they're going to say, what's the point of voting at all if we're never listened to?
Brendan O'Neill speaks of adults who are being treated like children. The Scottish Government are asking for children aged 8 to 18 to serve on a panel of children and young people to provide advice to the Scottish Government on Brexit.
Now we've launched it, I hope lots of young people across the country will be interested. And what we'll be doing is listening to young people and their views and folding those views into the process of negotiation.
When I responded by suggesting that this was indicative of the childish state of Scottish politics, a member of the Scottish Parliament immediately retweeted a comment along the lines of, why are you so cynical? Surely you would want your children to be part. Doesn't your heart leap for joy when your children are involved in the church and so on? Well, yes, my heart does leap for joy when children are involved in the church, but I'm not inviting them onto the Kirk session and I'm not letting them determine doctrine and policy. And to be honest, neither is the Scottish Government. What they're doing is creating a scenario where they're going to work directly with Mike Russell, the Brexit government minister, and the remit is to seek to limit the damage done to Scotland by Brexit which again indicates where they're coming from. This is not about seeking advice from children. This is about using children in propaganda. And as such, it is reminiscent of Mao's Little Red Guards and the continual way in which authoritarian regimes treat children like adults and adults like children. I guess almost in every podcast now, we like to comment on the madness that's engulfing Western society. And I just want to give you some examples, a couple of examples this week. There was an orientation leaflet given out to freshers at Brown University in 2015. This was a leaflet that was produced by the college authorities. And what it did was it condemned quantitative data, statistical information, and documentation through the written word as, quote, tools of systematic oppression, and urged students to set more store by personal experience. Yep, that's what some of our students are being taught. Meanwhile, the good old BBC is ensuring that it's on song when it comes to gender and gender identity and transgender issue. They've just appointed their first gender and identity journalist, Meghan Mohan, and they've announced that they'll give paid time off to those undergoing transition or transgender surgery. And then have a listen to this on BBC Radio 4's Today's programme, the main radio news programme.
The Westminster government says it's committed to improving the way that people can lawfully change their gender in England and Wales. At the moment, the law requires a medical certificate. One option is to scrap that and allow for self-identification. That idea causes some people concern, among them feminist campaigners. Reporting for PM from Brighton, which is planning for the Pride Festival this weekend, Ben Weiss.
A sunny Saturday on the Sussex coast, and one of the queerest events in Britain.
Trans rights! When do we want them? Now!
Trans Pride, as the name suggests, is about celebrating those who identify with a gender that's different from the one they were given at birth.
Look at what the journalist said. He said,
those who identify with a gender that's different from the one they were given at birth.
Different to what they were given at birth. Now again, stop and think about that, because the journalist clearly hasn't, just obeying the current rules of the zeitgeist.
Given at birth.
You're not given your gender at birth. When you are born, the nurse or the doctor or your parents don't look and go say, okay, I'm going to give you a gender. I think I'll make you a boy, or I think I'll make you a girl. Nobody does that. Your gender is tied in with biological sex, and that is determined, not at birth, by the way. That's one of the big mistakes that's made. But it's determined much, much earlier, when the egg is fertilized. It's determined in the womb. How are we getting to this crazy stage where we've got politically correct journalists stating something as fact, which is demonstrably false, and yet not to do that now will be considered a hate crime? Incredible.
I'm Sophie Cook, and my pronouns are she and her.
Incidentally, what's fascinating in that report as well is that it is largely the feminists who are coming out so strongly against the transgender.
Hi, I'm Natalie Washington, pronouns are she, her.
And that's because they see the problems.
I'm Kathleen Stock, and I'm a professor of philosophy at the University of Sussex.
Last month, Dr. Stock spoke at an event in Brighton for feminists sceptical about trans rights activism. Its original venue cancelled the booking, and the new one faced protests.
I think it's safe to say I have alienated people. Not that it was my intention to do so. I'm very clear about supporting trans rights. Legally, trans women with the right certificate have the status of women for certain well-defined purposes, and I'm happy enough with those purposes. That's fine. What I really dislike is the aggressive attempt to force the message that trans women are women in every single possible context you can think of. And if you question that as a female, you're transphobic, you're a TERF, you should shut up.
The government's talking about changes to the Gender Recognition Act. Mm-hmm. What concerns would gender critical feminists have with those changes?
The proposed changes are to make it a matter of self-certification. It just seems too easy. This gender reassignment gives access to a whole range of social spaces and benefits potentially.
Penny Mordaunt, the Equalities Minister, has said that it's unlikely the government would end up accepting pure self-identification She's also said that access to women's only spaces isn't at issue in this consultation, and that's something that trans activists would point out as well.
Well, the first thing to say is I think trans activists, obviously they're a broad church, and some of them say, oh, the Equalities Act's there already, you don't need to worry about that, feminist, it's already in place, it'll give you what you want. And the other half say, oh, the Equalities Act's been letting us in for years. So I'd like to know which it is.
I've read of a couple of instances of what is coming. So, for example, there was a report in the papers this week of a man who now says he's a woman being put in a woman's prison and sexually assaulting four women. In another case, a murderer, Paris Green, is to have £20,000 of gender surgery paid for by the taxpayer. Serving life, Peter Lang, who now wants to call himself Paris Green, is serving life for the torture and murder of a man in Glenrothes in Fife. And we, the taxpayers, now have to pay £20,000 whilst the health service is really suffering and whilst our public finances are suffering. We have to pay £20,000 to enable them to have this surgery. This, seriously, this is the madness that government supports.
The government says it's not looking at any changes to who can access women-only spaces. But in truth, this debate goes deeper than one government consultation. It's about identity. Who gets to say what makes a woman?
I'm with the feminists on this one. Let's move on to something else. Whilst I was in Australia, I had the great privilege of meeting John Anderson, the former Vice Premier of Australia, and he's doing a tremendous work just now interviewing people. He's a Christian, a strong believer, and he's got a wonderful series of interviews with different people. I think one of my favourites is this one with Neil Ferguson, who's one of my favourite historians.
A good illustration of this is the way in which young people think about communism. I mean, we are in the midst, I suppose, of celebrating Marx's, bicentenary. Now, the effects of Marxism in practice were catastrophic. And every state that was run by professed Marxists suffered significant economic and social dislocation, if not downright disaster. The ballpark number for the victims of communism in a century, in the 20th century, was roughly 100 million.
Listen to what he has to say about why young people in the West, particularly students, are buying into kind of Marxism socialism.
I was recently asked, you know, why are millennials attracted to socialism? And the answer is really simple. They've never experienced it. They never had their hand on the toaster. But they haven't been taught about it. If they have been taught about it, they've been taught about it by Marxists. There are very, very few courses that show the devastating consequences of the Russian Revolution for the Russian people. There are very, very few courses that assign Frank de Kerter's books on the Maoist regime in China. So it's really quite simple. We can't learn everything through personal experience. No young person had the chance to go to the Soviet Union. I'm old enough to have been to the Soviet Union when it still existed. They've got to be taught. And we don't do it.
This is the complete opposite of that earlier quote from Brown University that I used. We can't learn everything from our own experience and feelings. They've got to be taught. And the problem is we're not teaching. The irony is that so many people are buying into a myth. I mean, I was speaking to a young man this week who's just started coming along to the church. And he was telling me that so many of his friends are left-wing and atheist and Marxist, but they've no experience of Marxism. They've been taught it by Marxists or cultural Marxists in university, and it just seems a nice idea, but they have no experience, and they are not taught about what Marxism has done. So whilst being fascist gets you banned from the country, being a communist doesn't. And yet look at the harm that communism has done. Again, it just doesn't make sense. Speaking of which, I was quite amused at somebody who was quite militantly against Christianity and possibly still is, who put on his Facebook feed, "Fellow atheists, remember those rollicking days when we could endlessly piss-take Christianity?" Forgive the language, it's what he wrote. "Then when I turned my ire towards Islam, you all either unfriended me or refused to comment. I won't forget your hypocrisy. I really won't." Ironically, this gentleman is pointing out something that is unbelievably true. Again, part of the madness in our culture. That Christianity is easy game, but don't touch Islam. And yet, ironically, it's Islam that poses by far the biggest danger to Western liberal values. Now let's turn our attention to the church. Again, just with a couple of items. We mentioned last week angels, and we played a clip of an Irish Roman Catholic writer, a woman who was talking about unemployed angels. And yeah, I must admit, it was both amusing and sad. But it doesn't just come from the Catholic stable, it also comes from the Protestant stable. And listen to this Protestant charismatic preacher telling us about his encounter with angels.
I've had two angelic white feathers manifest in the natural realm, and I'm praying for people in the last month. I saw five blue angelic feathers manifest when I was praying for another pastor in our town. I've had four heavenly encounters. I've seen the Lord Jesus Christ. Over the last 15 years, my life has really gone from being a nervous breakdown to a lot of the book of Acts. Just read Acts. That's what my life's been like, really.
There you have it. Two angelic white feathers manifested themselves. Five blue ones manifested themselves, as well as four heavenly encounters and meeting Jesus. And this was the book of Acts. Now, this is the 21st century. This is Western Europe. This is a successful and growing Christian church. And these are hundreds of young people listening to a man applauding, probably agreeing with, telling us that there were white feathers and blue feathers. When I have white feathers land on me, I think seagull. Or when other stuff lands on me, I think seagull. Blue ones, I'm not so sure. But, I mean, do people really buy into this guff? Seriously? What bothers me even more is he goes on to say, you want more of God. You're here because you want more of God.
I am making the assumption, I'm being facetious, if you're here on a Sunday night, you want more of God.
I'm sorry. Angel feathers, even if it was true, bizarre stuff, that's not more of God. I can go into any secular bookshop and I can see that books on angels far outnumber books on Jesus Christ. And this is what's happening in the church. Jesus Christ is being left out. Speaking of which.
And Rob Bell has in many ways bid farewell to the church. He's no longer a pastor. He's moved to LA where he plays comedy clubs and hangs out with Oprah. He's become something of a spiritual guru for the non-religious. And Rob's argument is simple. We leave our homes to watch comedians. We view TED Talks. We might even listen to a politician's speech. So why not listen to a spiritual message? One that isn't confined to the four walls of a church. This is the new Rob Bell.
Now, I've written a piece on this so you can read it in more detail, but listen to this part of his interview with Premier.
Sometimes a word, it gets corrupted in its large-scale use. So I'm sure you've seen this. If you use certain words, you then have to add a whole other set of words to them because people have... That word almost could mean anything.
Yeah.
You would have loved this. I was speaking in a synagogue recently and said during the Q&A, somebody asked a question about evangelicals. And I said to them, you know where the word evangelical comes from, right? And I swear to you, the entire synagogue went, no. You know what I mean? Like yeah. They all were like, no. So I did... like a brief history of the word evangelical on the spot and how that was a Roman military propaganda term. Basically, Caesar had conquered a new territory, had enslaved a new group of people, had probably crucified the resistors, and then sent out an evangelical, a good news announcement that another tribe had been conquered. and that these first Christians took this Roman military term and they essentially, they're like punking it. They're like co-opting it to say, no, the world's not made better through coercive military violence. It's made better through sacrificial love. Mm. Caesar isn't remaking the world. Jesus is how you remake the world.
Bell is surely right to say that the meaning of a term can be demeaned, that language can be demeaned. And he is an absolute expert at that. He uses Christian language, although more and more it's becoming more and more obscure. So, for example, he will talk about spirit rather than the spirit. And he's very much moving in that direction.
This art form is about spirit, speaking to each person what they need to hear. It's about what's the new thing that the divine is up to in the world and how do we join in? And so I take that. For 25 years, I've been working this art form.
He uses words in a very clever way. And many, many people don't seem to grasp and understand how he's undermining the Christian gospel. And by the way, he just makes stuff up. In that clip that we just played, I'm sorry, but evangelical is not a Roman military term that the Christians took over. Evangelion is a Greek word. The Romans spoke Latin. There is no evidence for this whatsoever. Bell has either just read it somewhere or he's just making it up. But that's what you can do when you're a postmodern preacher who's an entertainer and people aren't that concerned about truth and who think that to critique that is somehow unloving and unkind. So let me finish with this. Why care about this stuff? The minute you write, I mean, as soon as I wrote a review of this, I knew instantly people would, you're being hateful, you're not showing the love of Christ, and so on. And I want to argue, well, the reason I care is because I care about Jesus. I don't care about my reputation. Well, I do, but not that much. And I really don't want to pick fights at all. But Rob Bell is a false teacher leading people away from Jesus Christ. And he's, I mean, it's just with incredible sorrow that I say this. He's just feeding people poison. And I'm sorry, I do care. And I care that Christian organizations promote this kind of stuff as though, oh, well, he's one kind of teacher and there's another and there's an open debate to be had here and so on. They wouldn't do that with racists. And Rob Bell is as dangerous and harmful as racists. We don't tolerate racism. Why do we tolerate this kind of heresy? Sure, engage with it. Sure, challenge it. Sure, interview him. But please don't put him forward as some kind of legitimate Christian voice. He's not a legitimate Christian voice. He's somebody who leads people away from Jesus, who undermines the scripture, who does the tactic of the devil. Does God really say the word didn't really mean this? This is what it really means. He's using Christianity. He's using Jesus. He has long since left the faith that he once professed. Well, that's it for another week. Please let us have any feedback, and hopefully we shall see you again next week. God bless you. Yo.
We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge and oddly enough, but makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising, loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in this society, hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.